So I suppose you wonder why I'm calling you here.
You know, mostly I wanted to have an opportunity to meet with you informally, you know, those of you who could be here, you know, just to give you an impromptu reading out of things that I've heard over the last couple days in the community engagement interviews. You know, the interviews have been a mixed bag in that attendance has been sparse, but the engagement has been spirited, and I think it's been useful in that there have been, you know, a handful of essential fundamental themes that have percolated up, you know, without, you know, my encouragement. I mean, these have been volunteered, and you know, there's a consistency to it, which, you know, after a few years of doing this in other communities, that, you know, that consistency is valuable. We have one more left, so that means we've had six, I think. One was a bust. We wanted to have a session in Agate. And, you know, it's like, what if you have a community engagement opportunity and nobody comes? That one, that was an evening session on Monday. I got to the school, we got everything set up. The school board, I think, was meeting at the same time. And, you know, as their meeting was going on, I went to the front door and, you know, there to welcome anyone who showed. 6:30 came, 6:35, 6:40, and about that time the school board was breaking up. Their meeting was breaking up, so they were getting ready to close down. I think, Susan, we could have stayed after, because I mean the board was going to finish before I was finished in any case. But as things started to close down, I just didn't feel quite comfortable being the person to close the building down. So we said, fine, you know, they've had a 10-minute, 15-minute grace period, you know, we're done. You know, the other sessions have you know, also been pretty sparsely attended, you know, one, two, or three people at each. Yeah, but I think the folks who have been, I think the, you know, the low turnout has been in part the result of just general busyness that people are engaged in. I think it was easier 5 years ago, 10 years ago to do this kind of engagement. I think it's also a reflection of just some of the distances that you guys are dealing with here. I mean, you know, Elbert County is 1,851 square miles in area, according to Wiki. And, you know, I mean, a couple of the folks that I talked to over the last couple of days have said, you know, it's a half hour each way to get, you know, to go anywhere anytime.
It's like a small New England state.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And it's, you know, so I mean, I think it takes a real, it takes a real commitment to do anything like we were proposing over these last few sets. You know, that said, you know, the input that we got was, you know, I think enthusiastic. It was largely consistent. Some of the more common themes that we heard had to do with the fundamental value of the library. Staff got high marks throughout for their friendliness, their helpfulness, their approachability, you know, and their kindness, their reference. But staff got high marks. One of the features, you know, when you ask what does the library do well, interlibrary loan was a key element, and that has come up in every single session. Mm-hmm. And you know, the fact that you are part of the Colorado Library Consortium, you know, is just, it's a key element, I think, to the services that you offer. You know, the users who participated in these sessions, you know, are certainly very well aware of it. They're aware of the library's facility to get things from, you know, this location to that within the county, but then to also get material from, you know, from, I've heard many times, if all I have to do is ask for it, and it appears. And that's, I think that's a very much, very appreciated service. The other thing that came up, you know, repeatedly was this notion of the library as a gathering place, as a community place, you know, the value of that, you know, within this community, you know, which really, you know, I find speaks to the way I've been characterizing the evolution of libraries over the last, you know, half generation. You know, sometimes I'll, you know, if I want to get big headed about it, I look over the arc of my career, you know, and how at the beginning of my career in the, you know, mid latter part of the last century, you know, libraries, public libraries were about static storage. And, you know, maybe 20 years ago, they started to evolve to emphasize as much, if not more, engagement and exchange. So we were changing two S's for two E's. You know, it's the whole alliterative thing. But yeah, it's, you know, in that engagement and exchange, you know, a lot of it that has to do with, you know, engagement between two individuals or three or four, you know, but, you know, groups in person. It has to do with engagement between a library user and material from the collection. I mean, it's very broadly defined, but it's a, you know, but it's an essential shift in what libraries are doing. It's not about static storage. It's not about, you know, so much about the stuff that you have. You know, I've been telling Susan over the last couple of days that I've been long made a distinction between the quantities of space and the qualities of space, the quantities of collection and so on. You know, and it's not so much, you know, at the beginning of my career, it very much was about quantities, and it was not just about quantities, but more. You know, the libraries in the 60s and 70s, you know, that was a period of tremendous funding resource. And I mean, there were federal grants and state grants, and libraries just grew and grew and grew and grew and grew. And it was, you know, and that's kind of when I came of age as a user, as a librarian, you know, and that's kind of, you know, the foundation of my experience as a librarian. So, you know, it was a surprise to me to learn that in 2003, 20 years ago, the number of volumes held per capita in all U.S. libraries, if you put all the collections together and all the capitas that we serve together, the number of volumes held per capita peaked in, I don't remember if we said, talked about this last month, but take a guess, peaked in 2003, 20 years ago, and has been, you know, not dramatic decline, but steady decline. Collections are getting leaner. Yeah. And that was illuminating for me, because, you know, my perception has been, you know, grow and grow and grow.
Then I have a question.
Yeah.
When did interconnectivity, i.e., when did it become more common to borrow books out of your system? Did that increase at 2003? What I'm wondering is, did collections decrease in size because you could get access to things from somewhere else, or not?
You know, I think it was a combination, a confluence of factors. I think the networks around 20 years ago started to become more diversified, and there was an increase in access to other collections. You know, that varied a little bit from one part of the country to another. I mean, the early part of my career was spent in Illinois, where I live now. You know, but Illinois was, as I understand it, one of the leaders in the country about developing library systems and resource sharing and so on. You know, so I mean, there's that piece of it too. But yeah, I'd say around 20 years ago, those that, you know, the sharing of catalog data, you know, kind of went into another level. Around that time, we were also on the library side, we also gained access to an increasing array of tools, you know, electronic tools that helped us monitor and evaluate use of the collection. So, you know, I've long said that, you know, for the last generation or so, we've been able to use those tools to make a 75,000 item collection like you have here, you know, make that behave like a 100,000 item collection used to behave. Okay, so, I mean, there are efficiencies that we've gained.
Yeah, I being an educator during those years, one of the things that I remember very distinctly, because I was, there were people that were trying to romance me out of education and get into like book sales and those kinds of things.
Mm-hmm.
And it was sort of in the Bush era.
Okay.
And first Bush.
Okay.
Okay. And there were, the one thing that they kept pounding in my, you know, this is really lucrative now.
Mm-hmm.
The price of books were going up, and there was a big push to modernize textbooks and a lot of different things. And I can remember that being something that was a source of consternation for the school libraries at that time. Mm-hmm. Now, I can't speak for the public libraries,
mm-hmm.
but I do know that there was quite a bit of talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
And in terms of the infancy of our ability to use computers to share information, et cetera, there was a lull in that. I can remember using the modem, putting my phone.
Yeah. Yeah.
On there. And so I don't want you to think that I'm trying to overplay that, because that was not fast. It moved with the speed and depthness of a glacier.
Oh, yeah.
In those days.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. You know, I just, you know, as you're talking about the modem, I'm remembering when my oldest daughter was, and she was about 10, she's 40 now. And you know, she was with me for a weekend. We put a new modem on that tripled the speed of the old modem. That was still like 3,300 baud.
Yeah.
And I, you know, but it's here's the new modem, and I leave her in the office to, you know, play with the computer for a little while. And after a few minutes, she comes into the living room and she sits next to me, and she kind of does this, which she was not wont to do. You know, and she said, you know, the new modem is really cool, Dad, but we have T1 lines at school. You know, I'm not getting you a T1 line, kid. But and as you're talking about technology, one of the really interesting things that came up in an early conversation, I was talking to one of the local educators was at the table. And talking about, we got into a conversation about haves and have-nots, and you know, interconnectivity. And one of his points was that, you know, in his classrooms, just there's been a very rapid change. Part of it wrought by the pandemic and the in-home schooling and the remote schooling and so on. But he said that there's only one family among all the families represented in his classroom, said there's only one that he can really identify that does not have sufficient access, sufficient speed, and he said, and even with them, he thinks it's more of a choice, you know, that they're making. It's not an economically dictated thing. And he was pointing out the availability of satellite access and so on and so on. And you know, I just, that was illuminating for me too, you know, that it, you know, maybe it is becoming more, one of his comments was, you know, we got homeless people who have, you know, 5G phones. And I hadn't thought about things in that way. It was a really interesting perspective for me. You know, I want to come back to some of these notes, static storage, engagement and exchange. There was a strong theme throughout these discussions about the library as a gathering place, a meeting place, a place for programming. One respondent talked about the importance of the socialization that is just kind of part of the library experience, and how that is different from, working remotely, working with computers and so on. You know, Susan and I have been talking about the interviews that she's going to be doing tomorrow, which are all remote. They're all online.
Three out of four.
That's right. You know, and it's just, and it's wonderful, you know, as far as it goes, but it is different. You know, I mean, there's some advantages, some things that you can really accomplish, you know, using those technologies, but it is different. There were, you know, I think from the standpoint of features that we want to keep in mind regarding the library's physical spaces, places to meet and gather were a prime concern, and those come in a lot of flavors. You know, we have a space like this, a formal program meeting room space, but it also includes things like, in my language, small group study rooms, and those are places where, you know, a group of two to four, maybe six, can gather together. You can have a meeting, you can talk and yak and go back and forth, but those are also spaces that users can go into when they need quiet. Again, thinking of the arc of my career, when you went into a library when I was a kid, over time that changed, and it's been interesting for me to watch how libraries of smaller and smaller and smaller and smaller scale have found it necessary and desirable to provide some kind of space where there is, where the user can get quiet. I mean, whether it's a quiet study room, maybe a room this size where there are a lot of chairs no talking is allowed. In some libraries, a quiet study room, like if it's of this size, might be designated even a click-free zone because you don't even want the noise of a computer keyboard going. But it's just, again, it has to do with spaces that that individuals can use, for a variety of associative purposes. Some of the participants talked of being able to trick out those spaces with technologies. And it's very true that in newer libraries, small group study rooms kind of come with teleconference capabilities and stuff.
Have you seen any kind of a move towards? Because I this was big with me. If you live out here, it's hard sometimes to get tutors, those kinds of things, mm-hmm. and they need small spaces mm-hmm. where somebody can accommodate 4 or 5 students, but they're isolated because you mm-hmm. generally have like ADHD kids, etc. Mm-hmm. That can't have all of that much stuff going on. Is that a thing?
Oh, absolutely. And as I'm talking about small group study rooms, that's another core activity that those spaces typically support. At the same time, I'm remembering, I'm thinking of a branch of the Chicago Public Library that opened, opened about 6 or 7 years ago now, the Chinatown branch. Got a good deal of press in library land. It won an AIA, ALA Library Building Award. And it's just, I just it's a building that tickles me. It's a wonderful building. It's very curvy. It's not, you know, it doesn't have a lot of the straight lines that libraries like. And ordinarily, I would be a little reluctant about that over the functionality. But it's just, there's a, on the first floor, it's two levels. On the first floor, there's kind of an open courtyard, which is next to the children's department and next to the meeting rooms. And the meeting rooms in the children's department are each designed so that, you know, like the meeting room can, the wall can open up and a program can spill out into this central core space. And the children's department likewise can do it. And I'm telling you all this because they specifically do use it for tutoring, kind of as an extension of the children's room. Now, you know, that setting is not going to respond, you know, to your observation about ADHD kids, because this is not a quiet space. But it just, I'm relating it to emphasize the importance of tutoring, and the library is a valuable gathering place within the community. Participants spoke in terms of improvements to improvements in the brightness of the space, you know, throughout, I think in all of the libraries that you operated. Typically came up, like it came up earlier today at Kiowa, but it, you know, and they were talking about that building, but I've heard it in relation to this building as well. It's brightness in terms of lighting levels, colors. And I think fair to say that, you know, I passed that along to Susan and she kind of sighed and said, oh yeah, I know we got these blues. I think if some of those, if the interiors could be changed, brightened, you know, enlivened with color, and to create a greater sense of openness and welcome, you know, by, and I would say that by way of making clear that there are, you know, that this is a place you can stay, that there are seats, you know, you remember what seats are. You come into this library and boom, you see the stacks. You know, the seats are hidden way in the back and they're hidden way over here. You just, you know, it doesn't look like a place that invites you to linger. Kiowa, there's like the one table, right? Right, at, you know, and it's right at the front, you know, yay, but you know, there's not much more. I think there, in this building, you know, you're not using the full height of the stacks, you know, which I would say is to the good, because you know, librarians have known forever that people don't use the top shelf in full height and they don't use the bottom shelf, you know. But you know, that structure is still there, you know, and I think it creates a visual impediment to the overall space. So you know, if we were to think about expanding or renovating this space, you know, I would encourage you to think in terms of lower shelving, you know, as opposed to taller shelving that we're only going to use part of. Other things, improve openness, brightness of space. You know, there was a kind of disconnect in some of the comments I heard over the idea that the library spaces don't encourage you to linger, and at the same time, the participants that I spoke with talked of typically using the library in what I'll call a grab and go mode. That they'll find something they want, they request it, and when it comes in, they come in and they get it, and they don't stay. And I don't know if that's, I can't tell which is the chicken and which is the egg. You know, are they doing that because the library space isn't sufficiently inviting, you know, or do they, you know, I don't know. Is some of that a lingering impact of COVID? I don't know. I know this library, as did a lot of other libraries, you know, went big into, you know, contactless curbside delivery, and that might be a piece of what's going on here. But it just, you know, I mean, there was a great appreciation for that grab and go mentality, but the grab and go mentality is, you know, it seems at contrary to this notion of wanting to create a space, you know, where you linger, where you socialize, where you engage. You know, so heaven forbid we're trying to get the general user population to be consistent in their thinking. But, you know, I mean, more constant themes, you know, the libraries, the importance of the library for younger users, kids, teens. There were some comments that the library is, you know, had peak moments and less peak moments with regard to serving the teens and tween population. But the respondents, I think, were pretty consistent in the value and importance of that. Another primary use had to do with grab and go, as I mentioned. Some of the other improvements going forward, several of the participants spoke in terms of programming and activity. Again, that's something that gathers people together. You know, that might be sometimes in a certain kind of conflict or inconsistency with, you know, what I mentioned as we started, you know, the, you know, people needing, you know, the interest that people might or might not have of simply getting out, you know, at the end of the day or, you know, on a Saturday or sometime. It's, I'm grateful for the opportunity at the first site visit and again on this visit, you know, to just be out and in the landscape, because it's important to understand what it is, you know, I mean, just the pragmatic reality of this setting.
May I just add also, I live out in Elbert, which is, you know, just a wide spot in the road. But there's quite a few people out there. They have a school and they have one of our satellite libraries. Mm-hmm. But the kids that go home there don't live close to the library at all. Mm-hmm. So, and they may have chores to do because it's agricultural. Mm-hmm. And so it's a different atmosphere. And so I don't, you know, like in some places, you know, if it's pretty urban, you'd have a kind of uniformity in what the expectations of parents are with their children and what after mm-hmm. school and what have you. You know, there are others that, you know, if the horses don't get fed, well, you know, then I've got to do it and I'm not going to be home until 6:30, mm-hmm. you know, that kind of thing. So I can see where the inconsistencies might be a little confusing, but it makes perfect sense if you live there.
Mm-hmm. You know? Yeah.
It's like I have a different experience. I'm one of these grab and go people. I come in the library. I very quickly pick my books and I shoot the bowl with the checkout people. And if I don't have checks or some other function to do, I'm gone.
Yeah.
And I very seldom ever hang around to read here. It's mostly I'm in and out. I'm in the course of doing other chores mm-hmm. during the day.
Mm-hmm.
And granted, I am weird in that I'm retired. And I have obligations at home, i.e., if my wife's not there, I'm expected to be there to babysit the kids, i.e., the kids are dogs, but our dogs are very, very spoiled. So and I look around and I have the feeling a large portion of people that use this library are in that mode,
mm-hmm.
Gets in and out very fast. And Yet I do see people come in here and use the computers mm-hmm. on a regular basis. Mm-hmm. And I do see people using the tables, i.e. They're using laptops and stuff. And or I know we have a couple areas that are used by tutors. So there's a lot of different things going on here. And I you've kind of hit it a little bit, but I had visions that overall county wise, we need more meeting spaces and we need a larger meeting spaces in the hinterlands than we have. And I don't know, maybe that's not correct. So,
well, you know, I think, yeah, I would agree that, that the meeting room issue is a key. Yeah, I mean, you look at the spaces that you have. I mean, this is, there's a meeting space attached to Simla. Is there not? Am I misrecording?
Just within the library itself.
But not with, yeah, but in the, yeah. Wasn't there in the building?
Mm-mm.
No?
No.
Okay. Then I've got some drinks mixed. But yeah. I mean, this becomes the only, you know, meaningful space yeah. then.
Well, there is a meeting space at Albert, i.e., it's where we had that board meeting.
The board meeting last, yeah.
And so there yeah. is a space there, and the meeting space at Kiowa is small.
Mm-hmm. Table.
But may I piggyback on this? You can't use that room in Albert. But for instance, our homeowners association has a lot of its home or its meetings here. There's right. no place to go.
I'm right
there.
Right.
You can't
right.
go into school.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
It's very tough.
Yeah.
So that's. But you talked on it right at the beginning. Spaces were. It's a ways to go anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, it's a 30-40 minute trek between
yeah,
here and
commitment.
There.
Yeah.
And so there's not a lot of choices.
Yeah. And I think the library as an institution becomes a logical location, a logical mm-hmm. locus for that kind of community involvement. And I don't know exactly what, I don't know what the implementation of this works out to be, but, to provide, meeting spaces, that where people can gather, it might be a room of this size, it might be a room somewhat larger than this. Does something like this get attached to Kiowa? I know you talked at, recently about the building that became available next door. Should Kiowa have some kind of meeting space? I would say absolutely yes.
It's got the fairgrounds, and that's through a different entity, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes it's a little more problematic as to how you get access.
Absolutely.
To that facility, but that's the only place in this county where we have that kind of facility.
Mm-hmm.
And there are two large spaces there in a couple of different buildings
mm-hmm.
Where functions can happen.
Sure.
But sometimes I think people are intimidated by not knowing how to get access to those places.
Sure.
And so, but Agate, again, that's that's a place that's off the radar, so to speak. They have a school there,
mm-hmm.
and there has been talk that they would like to join our system in a similar situation like we have in Elbert,
mm-hmm.
and so far it just hasn't happened. And COVID kind of set that back and put some of those things on the back burner, and I'm hoping that things get back on track there.
Mm-hmm.
But
I think it's I think I have some measure of understanding of the challenges of delivering service in that corner. I mean, I've been to that corner now twice and have some sense of the just the distance and the isolation.
It's hard to get to.
It is hard to get to. Yeah. Yeah.
And so
itself
is a logistics problem.
Yeah. On Monday, I took the long way around to get there. But I have some appreciation. I wonder, one of the things that's kicking around in my head is whether it would be valuable, feasible, doable to introduce, some kind of some variation on some of the kind of after hours delivery systems that are coming into library land. That you can have the simplest version of these are basic delivery lockers that you can put in different locations. When a user, a grab and go user,
An Amazon locker.
An Amazon locker. And I mean, those have, I have a client in the Chicago suburbs that put one of those in, built a new building, put one of those in, designed, you have the front door and immediately to the right, there was just a vestibule.
Mm-hmm.
And there was, I think maybe I'm making up a number, 30 lockers there. But that vestibule was designed to have 24/7 access. Anytime of day, night, whenever you can, it's convenient for you. And when you put your hold on something, you had an option to say, well, I'll come into the library and pick it up, put it in the locker. And when you, if you chose the latter, staff would put in a locker, send you an email or, convey to you that it's your thing is ready and it's in locker number 6, mm-hmm. and maybe there's a code that's connected to the last 4 of your library card number and boom, boom, boom. And number 6 opens up and you can get your item. I mean, and those are very simple. It's a very simple technology, simple devices. There are other devices that I've labeled red boxes for libraries.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm thinking of a library in Elgin, not a client, but they have a branch, and on the outside wall of that branch, it literally is a red box that's marketed to libraries. The material, there's a small focused catalog, that you can access on a touch screen. Everything that's available is in disc form, either audio or video. And it's disc form because, it's a uniform storage. Mm-hmm. Okay. That's one. This device is on the exterior wall. So again, access 24/7. There are other variations on that same concept. Here I'm thinking of the Pioneer Library system in Norman, Oklahoma, where at the main library, the West Branch and the East Branch, they have a more elaborate dispenser device where, the innards of this device are designed to support disc-based media, but books as well within a certain range. I'm looking at the books that are here on the Friends sale rack. Pretty much everything there could work in one of these, more format agnostic dispenser gizmos. You couldn't get a coffee table book in that. And I think there are a fair number of children's picture books that you get into these devices. But again, it just, it creates an opportunity. There's a catalog that you can search through. And if you find something in this more limited mini collection, you know, you can request it, and the device, you know, whirs and purrs and, you know, delivers the item in question to the delivery slot. You know, those devices are more, you know, they're more elaborate. There are more moving parts. They are more expensive. They can break down more often and so on. You know, but they're out there. They're out there. I remember working with the library in Sweetwater County, Wyoming, which, you know, like you, is, you know, very spread out, although there may be like 10 times as big as Elbert County is. I remember they're just, it's huge. I remember they are bigger than, you know, Connecticut, Delaware, Rhode Island, and,
yeah,
you know, one other, you know, put together. And it's, you know, I went out there thinking, well, you know, these delivery gizmos had just started to come out onto the market. And I'm saying, wow, perfect opportunity. You know, this library is operating, Sweetwater at the time was operating 10 branches, you know, because the community is so spread out. Most of the branches were open 8 hours a week, which is in some ways, you know, a big deal territory. But it, you know, I'm thinking, you know, man, if you could have a dispenser gizmo like that, wouldn't that be a great thing? I bring that up with the library director, and his immediate response is, you know what we would call that here? If I put one of those on the outside of the thus and such branch, I have no idea. He said, we'd call it target practice. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know, which, you know, I'm a kid from Illinois. I'm going, oh, okay. but it's, you know, that's the other side of, you know, knowing your community, I guess. You know,
it just, it wasn't like going to work. Mailboxes, it's still in the rural part of those, are considered baseball. You know.
Yeah. You know. So, you know, I'm not sure that you know, a dispenser gizmo would be a viable, you know, option here, but, you know, lockers.
Here, if the locker deal, if you had a vestibule where it's not exposed, would work. The problem is having access to that vestibule, mm-hmm. Because it, the communities around here have that vestibule type deal for the post offices. All their mailboxes, mm-hmm. You have your rural delivery, but there are a large number of people that have a post office box, and they expect to be able to go into that 24/7, mm-hmm. and it is available 24/7. I mean, my subdivision has no mail delivery. You have to have a PO box.
Okay.
And I'm less than a mile from town. And that's just the agreement when that subdivision was built.
Mm-hmm.
And being dog people, especially that are show people, we like that anonymity, so to speak, that people don't know where we live, because we are paranoid about somebody coming to swipe our show dog or whatever. And that's...
Sure.
That's a big deal around here.
Yeah.
And there's lots of farmers, ranchers, or people that have small acreages, mm-hmm. and they all function the same way.
Mm-hmm.
And they may, some people may have a rural delivery, but I see, it's still, it amazes me how many people function out of that,
yeah.
PO box. Situation.
Well, yeah, and I, back home, I have a PO box for library planning associates, and our post office is, the boxes are available, not 24/7 by any stretch, mm-hmm. but they're open and available a lot longer than the counter is open.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I'm familiar with that, but your comments make me wonder, you know, could a partnership be struck somehow with the Postal Service? I don't know.
It's a problem of space. It's a problem of space. Mm-hmm. They tend to expand and use all of their available space.
Sure.
It does change. The Elizabeth Post Office hasn't changed in size in the 25 years that I've lived here, and
kind of like libraries. I'm sorry.
Kiowa is the same way, and Albert, each one of these places have built standalone buildings, and they take that whole building and use it in.
Well, they have so much rural delivery.
Right, exactly.
But there's a lot of sorting there.
But your Redbox deal here, I think of Walmart and Safeway both have Redboxes. Mm-hmm. And again, access to those Redboxes are when the store hours that the store is open.
Because right.
They're not after hours when the store is closed. The vestibule or whatever the place where it's at is locked up, and you don't have that access. So that's something other to think about here. Having the 24/7 access, I don't know how many people would use that or not. And it's an interesting concept, though.
I'm interested in hearing about, a lot of these things I think are important, but I really, the opinions that the people have of our library system as it's currently running. Mm-hmm. And I can't believe it would be the same in every area.
Mm-hmm.
But I could be wrong. So I was really hoping we'd get to talk about that a little bit.
I did hear a lot of, and I understand this is kind of armchair quarterbacking, not quite the right term, but it's a kind of an immediate stream of consciousness feedback. I did hear a lot of the same. A lot of similar themes about the library, and whether it was the individual libraries or just a general level of appreciation for the library, being there. In terms of things that were needed, a lot of similar responses in all of the communities that I've been in. Greater sense of welcome, greater sense of openness, brightness. I'm not sure if I'm
let me give you a different example, maybe that'll help. The disparity, if you go to a collection that's shared with a public school,
mm-hmm.
the collection generally, if I'm correct me if I'm wrong, there are a lot of the books that would be considered more adult books. Are not, you're not going to go to Albert to get that.
Mm-hmm. 50 Shades of Grey?
Huh?
No 50 Shades of Grey in Albert?
Well, right now in Albert it's 50 Shades of Blue or Red or any other color.
Yeah.
But you know what I'm saying? I'm wondering, like I say, if you talk to the people in Albert, if their vision of the services provided to the general community were the same or on a par with what goes on here in Elizabeth, mm-hmm. Kiowa.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I want to throw my two cents in here because I originally moved to Elizabeth in 2006. Mm-hmm. And prior to moving here, I was a voracious reader. For the most part, when I was younger, I used the library unbelievably. And our libraries, you could borrow albums, record albums. Mm-hmm. You could borrow art. Mm-hmm. You could go, I went to a class to learn how to do bonsai. And this was all available, and it was nearby. So I said, okay, I expected the library to have a variety of stuff available to me. I came here to Elizabeth, and I went to the original library that was in the little building down in town.
Okay.
And I said, oh, this is not going to work because it's not going to have available to me. I don't think that it was maybe as big as this room for everything that was there. Mm-hmm. So then I moved to Douglas County, and I got my library card at Douglas County. And I would get the libraries out. But it was really annoying because it was like, okay, every time I want to get a book, I have to go and peruse everything in Douglas County. Lovely library. They had a lot of stuff available. They had the private rooms. They had meeting rooms. They had a big stage thing. You could have PowerPoint and microphones and the whole deal. And then I just got tired of driving to Douglas County and stuff. So I would end up Barnes & Noble, or I would get stuff off the. And now I've finally gotten to the point. Then COVID came. I got on Libby. Mm-hmm. All right. So I tried Libby. And then they said, okay, I want this book. 3 weeks from now, you can get this book. Mm-hmm. I want to try this Audible book. I get an Audible book. I have this big issue. If I don't care for their voices, that book gets returned instantaneously. Mm-hmm. And if they do not hire professional readers, most of those people, the Audible books are horrible. Like, can't stand the voice, just grates on me.
Yeah.
All right. So I did the Libby and stuff like that. And then finally, and I'm talking to my sister and saying, you got to get on this and get the books. And she goes, oh no, Kindle Unlimited. She talked me into Kindle Unlimited. The books that are available, it costs me $10 a month. I am a big sci-fi fantasy kind of person, which is not always easy to find in a lot of public libraries. You also find people that purchase sci-fi and fantasy books, they never give them away. Okay? They stay in their library forever and ever. So I am now to the point where, okay, I finished this. I'm going to go back up on Amazon, get another book.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just been so convenient. So has anybody talked to you about the opportunities that are available in that way? Now, that's just books, because mm-hmm. I would like to see the libraries become more open to the community. Mm-hmm. I want the library to get out of Elbert County. The Elbert County School.
The schools.
I want it to be a standalone. If Agate happens, instead of being in the school, maybe we could use a piece of their property and put up a temporary, you know, like a mobile home type thing, something like that. I would think about that, because I don't like the idea of the general public having access to our schools. That's something mm-hmm. that, you know, you talk about target practice. Now, you might think of balls. I was thinking of people shooting at it. Mm-hmm. My thought about the red box.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, the target practice line from Wyoming, that's exactly
yes.
what it was.
Yes.
Yeah.
Thinking about the red box is now you're telling people, okay, we have these available, but you have to have the player. They have to have something to play that DVD or
Except that some of the dispenser gizmos that I was referring to, and thinking specifically of the example at Pioneer Library System in Norman, the innards of that, and again, the way the material is stored, it's a tray, and you can put they can accommodate books.
Okay.
There are a few different flavors of these things. Red boxes do focus only on discs because they are compact. You can get
a ton in there.
You can get a ton in a little space in a red box. The storage and dispenser device at Pioneer Library System in Norman, Oklahoma is the size of that wall. And it, even so, it has a pretty dense collection, but it's nowhere, a red box has, I'm making some stuff up here, but it has more stuff in a red box than the Pioneer Library System has there. The trade-off is that Pioneer Library System's dispenser gizmo gives you, has the option of giving you, regular old books that don't need a device at home to work with. But I'm sorry, I interrupted you.
No, that's okay. And then my other final thing is one of the things I remember, my original library when I lived in Islip, New York, they put a post office, drop your books here after hours. Well, that went down the tubes when they set it on fire. So...
Yeah, there are.
There's problems with the whole bunch, different.
There is an element of, I guess, pick your poison involved with this. Mm-hmm. It's a matter of what set of headaches do you want to, headaches do you want to deal with? As you mentioned, what I'll label as a remote return. My hometown library in Normal, Illinois has five or six of those in different parts of town, and I'm not aware that there have been any major incidents.
And I have to say, this is back in the 80s.
Okay. Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Any after hours depository is subject to that. When I've been away from the Wisconsin State Library Agency for 25 years, but there was late in my tenure there an incident in the library, a small town library near Oshkosh, where it was a Monday night. The single police officer who was on duty, Monday night football, I don't know what he was doing, but he wasn't actively patrolling, and someone stuffed a paper grocery bag with bottle rockets into the library's after hours book drop. And there's one simple thing that you can do to help in that instance, which is to enclose the book drop in a fire rated enclosure. Even better if you could put a sprinkler head in it. But this library, it was a small rural community trustee.
Surveillance camera.
And a surveillance camera. Exactly. It just dumped into the library, and boom, the bottle rockets went off, and the library was, the whole thing was wrecked.
Yeah. Well, this was not attached to the library. It was a post office container thing. So it was separate, so that it went on fire and the library did not.
Yeah. Well, conceptually, isn't it similar to you have a box outside here?
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah. And so conceptually it's the same thing. It's just this one might be a little closer than to the building than the one that you, but even this amount of separation is going to give you some extra
safety.
Protection, some extra safety when the Yahoo does something stupid.
But here, to cover another point, the groups that you've talked to so far, has anybody said, in the northwest corner of our county, we don't have any service? Has anybody indicated you know, they would like to see that, or are there other places in the county where somebody has said, I would like to see some kind of service or not?
You know, no one in the sessions that I've done so far, no one has explicitly said we need some kind of service in the Northwest. There have been many who've pointed out that that's where most of the growth is happening.
Right.
After this meeting, I'm going up to the Northwest corner to have one last session. You know, that we've, you know, conceptually our thought is if it's going to come up, that's where it's going to come up. But it hasn't come up directly. And, you know, I guess even if it doesn't come up from, you know, the participants in these sessions, you know, we know that that needs to be on the table because of the growth patterns that have been occurring in recent years and the growth patterns that we anticipate are gonna happen.
Nothing upsets a new resident more in this county than the fact that they have to drive to Kiowa to get anything done with their license or license plates. They feel like they live in Aurora.
They live in?
Aurora.
Okay.
Okay, or whatever.
Oh, see, I find it a pleasure to go out there.
Well, you do. But if you talk to them over at the license bureau, it's a little bit different story. And so one of the things I always think of, you know, if there's a group of people in another portion where it's sparsely populated, they may have the demand to, you know, have more library services, but you can look at them straight face and say, but you don't have the population to support.
Right.
It's not inconceivable to think that in the Northwest corner, in the next 10 years, there may be denser population than there is even here. And so at a certain point, they'll look you straight in the eye and they're going to say, look, we pay insane property taxes and we want this. And I think we need to be cognizant of that fact that it feels like we're kind of on the, you know, edge of civilization here, but you know, if you're up in the Northwest corner, you feel like you're in Aurora. You really do. And so it is something that I think we have to think about. We also then have to lean, I think, on our commissioners and our, you know, our development practices. You know, at one point, you know, they kind of looked at us and said, so could you, you know, take some of the money that you've been saving to improve this library and build us a new library in that part, because we've got a lot of people down there now. And your answer has to be a straight up no. We're proud of ourselves that we've paid this building off, but, you know, they hear that you have a couple $1 million set aside, it doesn't go far.
No.
Right.
True.
You know.
True.
And so I think whoever is heading this ship has to be aware that pressure is real, but our ability to make it clear to the governments in this county that we cannot, you know, I mean, we'll get more money because we are, you know, we do have our, you know, we're able to collect tax, but it is, just don't know that it's going to keep up with the growth.
Yeah. So, yeah. You know, it's, I'm still trying to wrap my head around a variety of issues related to that. One of the issues, frankly, was part of a conversation that Susan and I had today about the Colorado Library Card, which is, you know, on the one hand, it's a wonderful service. It's a wonderful thing in that library service is available to everyone in the state, mm-hmm. one way or another. That is a tremendous thing. Mm-hmm. You know, where, I mean, and I'm still thinking through this. So these are immediate reactions where I think Colorado might have not gotten it quite right is, you know, that someone from the northwest corner can go to Douglas, present their driver's license, and get a card and get full service there. Mm-hmm. And you know, I think in other parts of the country that I'm familiar with, you know, you at least need to go to your quote home library and establish a connection at your home library before you're eligible to go somewhere else. And I'm still processing through these things, but my gut says that connection is important to be made, because, you know, whether, you know, someone can go to Douglas and get a card or not, you know, as you said just now, they're still paying taxes here, you know, and that's part of the you know, one of the participants that I spoke to earlier talked about return on investment and was commending the library for maintaining the four facilities that you maintain. Yeah, because it speaks to, and this is my language, a kind of retail aspect to service in this vast geographic area. And your comments about the need at some point for another facility in that concentration of public speaks to that same aspect, I think, you know, that kind of retail.
Well, we also have to have the ability to talk to developers and say to them, look, you know, these are the facts of the situation, and you want to be able to tell your customers that this is a vibrant, healthy community. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, start thinking about saving a few of those lots, you know, and giving an opportunity mm-hmm. to a library system mm-hmm. to build. It, you know, because it's the raw right. land that's going to kill you.
Right.
The raw land and water and sewer is the issue out in these hinterlands, sure. so to speak.
Sure.
Because a lot of these developments can't function unless they have that infrastructure there.
Mm-hmm.
And the county commissioners here are somewhat lax in that they allow development in areas, and I don't think they think it through as to where the water is going to come from mm-hmm. and who's going to process the sewer. And so to have a library, those are vital things to make it function.
Well, it's quality of life
yeah.
issues, plain and simple. Yeah.
I retired in 13, and when I was working, I'm not the average person in that I read a lot. And my favorite place when I was working, I knew where every book exchange was in the Metro Denver area, mm-hmm. and I always had a pile of books in my truck. When I had time, I'd go by there and I'd go in there for a few bucks. I would buy a whole bunch of paperbacks and I'd read through those, and they would go in my pile, be my next exchange deal.
Sure.
And when I retired, I quit going to town, so to speak, and I don't hit those places. So my wife said, we have a library here. And so I am a chronic user of the library here.
Mm-hmm. A grab and go kind of guy, I'm told.
Yes, and exactly. I mean,
monikers I'm not sure you want to wear.
Well,
grab and go.
I come in once a week, and the gals, if I don't come in that week, they wonder why he's sick.
Because
I come in and get five or six books, or four books, and that's my quota for the week. Mm-hmm. And I read through them, and I come in the next week, and never on quite the same day, but
yeah.
The gals can expect me to be here once a week. But I'm also pretty indiscriminate in that I'll read damn near anything just to see what the heck is in the library.
Right.
And so in that respect, I'm a little bit weird.
Mm.
And I...
weird?
So, but anyway, it's kind of a strange thing, and I look around the majority of my friends, I hate to say it, very few of them use the library, and I've tried to get them interested in, you know, in reading, and I have one friend, he still doesn't understand that he could, every book that he buys, he could probably get here at the library. And I ask him, after you read the book, what happens to it?
Mm-hmm.
And he invariably, half the time, he says, well, I give it to a friend.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Unless it's science fiction, right?
That's right. That's right. So, I have my own library at home.
So, you know, so far I have not made any inroads with him or a couple other people like him. They'll buy their book, and then they'll give it to one of their friends as something to read,
mm-hmm.
and then that friend will pass it on.
Mm-hmm.
And I keep saying, you know, get a card and come to the library.
Yeah.
You won't be spending $20 every 2 weeks or whatever it is you're spending on buying those books. And so anyway.
Yeah.
I'd like to interrupt for just a second. Where are we on your agenda?
I'm sorry?
I want to make sure we cover everything.
You know, I think I have covered a lot of what I wanted to share with you. And this was a bit of a progress report. There are one or two other points that I did want to cover. So thanks for bringing us on task. You know, part of what I wanted to cover with you was highly important memo number 2, which I think you've just recently received. I don't expect you to have read it yet by any stretch, but this memo, number one, here we go.
Well, number 2,
the number 1 is a simple compilation of the library's annual report. It's nice to know how things have progressed and developed over a period of time. Number 2 tries to place this library in the context of a larger group of, quote, like, similar libraries, so that we might be able to understand a little bit more of, you know, what some of the local numbers mean. You know, for example, my stock example is this library has a collection of 75,000 items, give or take. Is that a lot? Is it not a lot? By looking at the annual report numbers, you don't know. You know, but we can use a database of public library statistics that's maintained by the Institute for Museum and Library Services, Washington, D.C. The Institute for Museum and Library Services has been working with the state library agencies for 30 years now to standardize annual report definitions and hoover up all of that annual report data at the state level, compile it into a national database, and they publish it. It's a tremendous resource that we have. Memo number 2, we've gone in and into that database, we've pulled a sample of libraries that serve, I think it's 25,000 to 40,000 population. And you can distill the combined experience of that group to create a kind of benchmark that we can then use to assess where this library is. Yeah. A lot of the elements, especially a lot of the collection related elements, I think we found to be kind of pretty much where you would think they would be. I mean, the book collection, the total collection was pretty much where you would expect it to be, given the combined experience of all these libraries nationwide. The non-print or the audio collection was a little low. Video collection was high. You know, and that's neither good nor bad. It just is. And Susan and I have talked a bit about, you know, kind of what has prompted the audio collection to be where it is, the video collection to be where it is. You know, I think going forward, you know, it's useful information for us because, you know, this library has developed a certain balance within its collection, and we might want to keep that in mind as we think about what the balance should be at a future date, you know, because this is a long-range planning study. You know, some of the use measures we found are low here, circulation, visits. That might be a kind of lingering impact of COVID, because the data set we're dealing with, the latest data set that they have printed is 2021. So, I mean, your library, I know from prior conversation, I mean, you guys, the board was very cautious about service and access and being open and so on. And I think that might be lingering in some of the use-based numbers.
I'd like to just add to that we were awfully careful with our employees.
Yeah.
I mean, that was our, you know, I think probably the driving force.
Okay.
Is that we really did not want anybody getting sick.
Right. Yeah. I think one of the other pieces that I wanted to highlight out of memo number two has to do with the fact that this library does operate four facilities. For a library that serves this population, that's very unusual. And I think it percolates through a variety of other measures as well. Susan and I were talking about this on Monday, and I did some other double and triple checking. You know, we did in memo number two, we started with pulling a full nationwide cohort, all of the libraries that serve 25 to 40,000 population. That range is meant to capture and bracket the current population, which is 27,000 plus, the year 2030 population, which is projected to be, I think, 33,000 and change, and the year 2040 population, which is projected to be 37,000 and change. So I'm hoping that we can use one data set to kind of assess the current state and to anticipate future states as well. The 25 to 40,000 population, there were a round number 750 libraries in that set. Because we're aware that this is a county library, counties tend to be larger service jurisdictions. We did a subset of libraries that serve just counties. There were 150 of those, and it's all reported in memo number two. When we looked at the libraries in that group, they were larger than most of the municipal and city libraries, but even so, out of that 150, the median size county library was around 500 square miles in area. Elbert is, as I said before, 1,851 square miles. So we looked at, it was a fun way to spend a Saturday afternoon. I just looked them all up on Wiki, and got the square miles. There are 24 libraries out of that larger county group, 24 that serve 1,000 square miles or more I mean, and I just, and I'm conveying that to you just so that we all understand how, you know, kind of rare this service jurisdiction is.
It's like Robert used to say, "You're special, Robert."
You know, well, you know, and you know, and even you know, I've started to look at that smaller group and try to distill the experience of that group. You know, and even so, the median number of facilities operated by that smaller group, the median number is somewhere between 2 and 3. So you're still a bit of an outlier with the 4 facilities that you operate. You know, at the same time, you know, I go back to the participants' comment earlier on about the return on the taxpayer investment, the fact that you are maintaining that retail aspect to service. I mean, you're kind of in the neighborhoods as best you can. The questions about the Northwest have to, you know, they one way or another cycle, I think, around, you know, getting in, you know, being in that neighborhood and keeping that same kind of retail aspect. In the full national cohort, 72% operate a single building. More than 90% operate 1 or 2 or 3. When you look at the county cohort, you know, that smaller group of 150, 33% operate a single building. Even so, 75% operate 1 or 2 or 3. A quarter operate 4 or more. I mean, it's an unusual.
What you're saying is we're actually operating.
We're doing better.
Right, we're doing better from the standpoint we're covering a bigger area with.
And you're doing it by having more buildings.
But
and look, operating.
My next question is then, how does our budget, our yearly budget, compare to these other groups? Are we in the ballpark for money spent, for what we give, or are we behind, or are we ahead? Where do we fall? That's what I don't
give me.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I meant to copy those for you today, and I just spaced it completely, but I can make them for you after the meeting.
No, just send them.
Well, I think I emailed them. But
yeah. Well, that's my problem. I'm rather lax on reading emails.
I'll make you a copy.
My friends chronically are on my case. You're lucky if you look at your emails every 2 days.
Yeah. And, you know, I tell you, the wishy-washy, I'm reminded of Paul Tsongas in New Hampshire in 1992. He said to a reporter, he was running for president, Senator Paul Tsongas, he said, "That's an excellent question. Let me try to evade you." but I mean, but it really it depends on, you know, how you're doing depends on what, how you're slicing and dicing the cohort. Against the full national cohort, a library that serves around 27,000 population should have can be expected to spend $44.50 per capita. Pines and Plains in 2021 spent $34.30 per capita. Okay, I mean it's a little below the expected mark, but you know, not super low.
Mm-hmm.
We also did a regional sub cohort. I mentioned the county cohort. We did a regional sub cohort because it's a fact of life that service expectations and service support and service heritage are different. Expectations are different in different parts of the country. You know, Illinois, where I'm from, has a strong heritage of library service. Libraries have been well funded for a long time. You know, I've done a lot of work in Mississippi and Tennessee, and that's not quite the case.
Right.
In Mississippi and Tennessee. So I always like to try and isolate region in some way. In this case, the regional cohort was the libraries out of the full national cohort within roughly a 500-mile radius. We needed to push the radius out a certain distance in order to get enough libraries in the cohort to do the analysis. Against the regional sub-cohort, the benchmark for a library that serves 27,000 is expenditures of $26.25 against $34.30. The other thing to keep in mind is that the regional sub cohort is more, the benchmark in the regional is more modest than the benchmark for the full national cohort. And that's, I'm glad you asked that question because it reminded me, I wanted to pass this along to you as well. The regional sub cohort in this current state examination, the regional sub cohort is pretty consistently more modest than the full national cohort. What that suggests to me is that, there is something going on kind of within this, High Plains, Great Plains area. There is something going on that, the service expectations are not as assertive as they are in some other parts of the country. And as we start to look at future service goals, let's keep that in mind. The other sub cohort that we did was that county library sub cohort. And from that perspective, the benchmark was $30 per capita. And again, you're at $34.30. So, the answer to your question, how do we stack up on expenditures? It kind of depends to a degree.
It could be skewed also by anomalies like Aspen, Vail, where you have huge, money and relatively a small population.
Right.
And that could skew it as well.
Having worked years ago with the library in Telluride, I think I have some direct understanding of that. There's also the issue in those communities whereby the service population in some ways underpresents the reality because of the folks who are there, weekends and so on. There are different complications in different settings. And as I talked about those 24 libraries that serve more than 1,000 square miles, there's one outlier in that bunch because the largest geographic service jurisdiction in that group is a library in Alaska that serves 25,000 square miles. It kind of boggles.
They must mail their books out.
That could be, I don't know, but yeah.
Well, they're in Alaska. It's just a fact of life. You fly everywhere get. You have these little puddle jumper planes that fly from lake to lake, and that's how people get around in commercial services. Few and far between.
Sure. Put a helipad on the top of your library.
Unless you charter, it just doesn't happen.
Yeah.
And so.
Like the book ferry that they used to operate along the coast of Norway.
It's interesting. It sounds to me like we're doing a reasonable job for money spent, or in fact we're doing better than average in some respects. Yet we have pressures here because we have a fairly rich county very close to us, and people that come here come from that place, and they got good service there, and they're expecting to have this similar service here. And sometimes it's a rude awakening. I mean, it's like when she moved here, things were changed. And so for some respects, it's a failure. In other respects, it's a success. So,
my inner Anders is nodding along with you. I mean, one of the things we talked about yesterday, I think, I gave Susan a map and said, tell me who's around you. I mean, I'm hearing a lot about Parker and Castle Rock and so on. But I also know that these, some of your neighboring libraries you know, there's you know, a much bigger tax base. It's much, you know, much more support. It's much more this. It's much more that. You know, and it's part of the challenge that I'm trying to wrap my head about. Mm-hmm. You know, when I was a library director early in my career, Chicago suburbs, you know, it was a little town called Roselle on the Milwaukee Road line. Well, our immediate neighbor to the north was a town called Schaumburg, which was the home of the Woodfield Shopping Mall, which was effectively the Mall of America before they built the Mall of America in the Twin. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was this huge mega indoor shopping mall. They were, Schaumburg was and still is the galactic headquarters of Motorola and God knows how many other, you know, Fortune 6 companies. You know, they just, tremendous development, huge tax base, one of the biggest per capita income figures in the state of Illinois. And, you know, we always had patrons coming into the our little library saying, you know, why don't you have as many business magazines as Schaumburg does? Build this, you know, Woodfield out in that bacon part, you know, or, you know, or I'm thinking of the library. I did a study some years ago for Allegheny County Library, Pittsburgh area, you know, the 40 or so libraries that serve Allegheny County. And, you know, in many ways, Pittsburgh is the home, the mother home of the American Public Library movement, because that's where Carnegie was. That's where he made his first gifts, and kind of everything filtered out from there. And as I was doing this countywide survey, you know, I was really surprised that there were, you know, that the service expectations were as low as they were, frankly. You know, there were a lot of libraries in, you know, large suburbs that were open 40 hours a week, and, you know, they all thought that was doing really great, but when you plug that into a larger national landscape, it's like, big deal. 40 hours a week isn't a lot for an urban setting. And
especially if you got shift workers.
Yeah, you know, but it was, you know, at one point I had a meeting with a county official, and he said, just kind of in passing, of all the counties in all the country, Allegheny County has the highest ratio of people who were born, raised, live, and die in the county, never go anywhere else. He went on to say there were a handful of communities that kind of bucked that trend. And as he rattled those off, I kind of had to do this, because all of those library, all of those communities either had built a new building recently, a library building, or they had a new one in progress. And all I could think was, you had people coming in from, you know, I don't know, Minnesota, Elbert County, you know, saying, what, this is as good as we can do. Yeah, but I mean, it's just, I think that's part of the challenge.
Well, this county is weird in that we're L-shaped, and you go to the far bottom end down there, and there's little or nothing as far as towns and stuff goes. You come up this way and it gets more dense. Mm-hmm. And then if you look at us and you compare us to some of the mountain counties, in that some of those counties may be smaller, but the population areas are separated by canyons, valleys, whatever, and roads are not, nothing goes through to anywhere. And that's probably the biggest problem in this county. There's not a lot of roads that go through to connect the various parts to. And so that's why it's always an adventure, especially when the weather's bad. It's 30 minutes to get to anywhere.
Yeah.
And you're lucky.
You will forgive me. I'm smiling because, you know, as you're talking about the geography and different parts of the state, one of the early projects that Library Planning Associates did was a study for the Colorado State Library. This was in the early mid-late 80s. But we were evaluating the state library's services to the local libraries across the state. We were also examining the funding formula for the systems that were in effect at that time. And one of the jokes among the system directors is that there should be a funding formula factor that had to do with how many mountain passes were in your system. But, you know, same thing.
I have just a question. Because you mentioned that this is Colorado State Library system. Mm-hmm. Would the company, because I could see that the northwest corner of Elbert is probably running into Parker or Aurora and getting their services. Mm-hmm. Doesn't the Douglas County, quote, library system say, hey, maybe we should collect some money from Elbert because we're serving their customers?
I'm going to look at
Susan. Yeah, they haven't come up to that yet.
But it is not impossible to believe that somebody will. I mean, we have to do this kind of work because we're growing. They've already done a lot of that growth. Mm-hmm. And the reason they would hire you would be something slightly different. Mm-hmm. And so they may not even recognize that fact as being.
Well, I can say that we're pulling out of their little bag of money.
We are.
Yeah.
I mean, they just spent $13 million, and built a super nice deal in Parker, and they just brought online their new library in Castle Rock, mm-hmm. and I don't know how many million they spent on that. Mm-hmm. And it's my understanding they're working on something in the Highlands Ranch area, and it boggles my mind that they have the money to, yeah. you know, just plunk down and yeah. do it.
Yeah.
But they have 10 times the population we have, and yet, but they, when you get farther down south in their county, they have little or nothing. You go to Larkspur area, and Larkspur, I found out through some of my acquaintances that they have a library there that functions out of their system, and it's all run by volunteers. It's only open mm-hmm. X number of hours a day, mm-hmm. X number of days per week, of which I think it's only 2 days a week that it's open, mm-hmm. and people use that thing, and it functions and it works, and it apparently is totally outside of the Douglas County system.
Huh. Yeah, I mean that you raise an important question of equity, plain and simple, and it shows up in other jurisdictions in slightly different fashions. When I was on the state library staff in Wisconsin, the structure of library service there were quote served areas and unserved areas. A served area was one that had a public library established for the purpose of, that might be based on a municipality or a town or a couple towns that have come together to create a district. But there was, in most parts of the state, there were these outlying county areas, and Wisconsin, as they organized broader statewide services, Wisconsin chose to build on a county basis. The county became responsible for funding service to the outlying county. Typically, most counties did that by paying the local libraries, the municipal libraries within the county, to serve the people in the outlying area. The hiccup came in that it only accounted for operating costs. When it came time to do a building project, those municipalities, really need to take into account the impact of service to the outlying county. Yeah, and most of them tried to do that, but there was no mechanism to get the capital money, from the county. So I mean, it's a variation on that mm-hmm. equity issue. When I was a director in Illinois, we were Illinois libraries, especially in the, I should say, in the Chicago suburban area, were very aware of what we termed reciprocal borrowing. The library A patron from library A goes to library B. If you have a card, you honor the card. And you know, in the Chicago metro area, the systems offered money, you know, to the reciprocal borrowing net lenders. And, you know, and it was a particularly sensitive issue in the Chicago suburbs because, you know, we were right next to one another. You know, mm-hmm. Downstate, you know, in the southern Illinois, they didn't care because it wasn't, you know, it was such a small piece of their overall activity. They just let it go. But
well, I want to ask then on a different basis here then, with what you've discovered or talked to so far, do you see any glaring areas where we need to do something better? Or are we, do you think we're doing okay? It sounds like in some respects we're doing as well as most places, mm-hmm. In our geographical size and whatever, but has any one group or different groups come together and say, okay, this is a mushroom here that's growing and it's something we need to address or be aware of that's going to grab at us sometime in the very near future?
Well, yeah, I think we talked earlier about the need for better meeting spaces and gathering spaces. That's a clear need. I think, you know, although it hasn't come up directly in conversation with, you know, representative, you know, in users and, you know, the people that have been coming to these sessions, I think there's an understandable concern about the northwest corner and being able to provide, you know, a reasonable direct service to that population. I mean, I think it's, I don't think the library can just assume that it's okay for Douglas County to pick that up, you know, for example. You know, I mean, there's, you know, there is a return that needs to be addressed. You know, I mean, another consistent theme that I've heard, you know, that meshes with my own observations, it has to do with just the comportment of the space, kind of the balance between, you know, gathering spaces, you know, within the library proper and collection spaces. You know, part of what we need to do too is to look forward and, you know, evaluate as this community grows, you know, presumably the collection should expand as well. And then we need to think about, and these are questions and issues that we're going to start exploring, you know, as we get beyond this present site visit, as this collection grows, you know, how do we want to deploy it among three other locations or the four locations in total, you know, or maybe five, you know, and what kinds of seating inventory should we provide and so on. So I think it is correct to say that, you know, in a lot of ways, the library is doing a pretty good job. It's, you know, the collection, you know, looks to be pretty much on the mark where it should be. Use, as I said earlier, it's a little bit off. You know, funding levels, you know, look to be, you know, I'll say within tolerances. You know, it's a little low from this angle, it's a little high from that angle, but, you know, it's not, heaven forbid, it's not like the library in West Virginia that I just finished working with. You know, that was, you know, West Virginia is one of those different settings. You know, they just don't have, you know, there's not a lot of heritage there for sure.
The message I'm taking from a lot of this is that we have to be proactive, because all of these things use the words margin a lot. They're within the margin, those kinds of things. It means that, you know, we have to keep our thumb on the pulse of this, because that's when somebody will turn around and they won't care about that we were in the margins. They'll care about what they can have right now. And so, and
what have you done for me lately?
Yeah, exactly. So, this is very helpful.
And I think that, you're taking the step of bringing someone in to take this look, which we're continuing, that's part of being proactive and having a discussion about do we have add a fifth facility, having the discussion about is it better for us to offer after hours lockers or a distribution device. We haven't even gotten into drone delivery yet.
Yeah. Well, I was thinking about a mobile library.
Libraries have been tinkering with those, mostly out in Silicon Valley, but imagine all the possibilities. When I worked with the library in Fayetteville, Arkansas, and they about a year and a half ago opened an expansion of their existing building. I have not been back to visit the expanded building yet, but as we were doing the planning, the library director, it was a little bit tongue in cheek, only a little bit. He kept saying, "I want to make sure that when we plan the layout of the stacks, the aisles are wide enough for the robots we're going to use."
Yeah.
To reshelve the material. And more likely there'll be some reverse engineering that they'll design the robots to fit into the 4.5 or 3.5 foot aisles that most libraries have. But it's out there. It's all out there. We are well past the allotted hour and a half.
Yeah.
So I applaud your collective stamina.
There's more sugar if you need to.
None of you fell asleep. That's a win.
Well, it was close. It was close there. I perked up there when you started talking about
it. Yeah, it doesn't start till 6:30.
And I got a charge there.
There you go, the number guy. Yeah.
Okay.
So before we break up, Susan, how are you doing with all of this?
I mean, it's fascinating. It's just been really fun and thought provoking and there's so much, we have so much possibility of what we end up doing. And I just, it's really been fun. It really has been energizing.
She has been very cautious to not say very much in response to some of the questions that I have, because she very much wants me to come to my own conclusions and not direct, and that's good for her.
And as a newcomer, how are you feeling about this sort of look into the future?
I think it's very educational. I didn't meet you. I'm Kim. I'm at the Iowa branch manager. But also a lot of the things that I think that you pointed out about the meeting space. Mm-hmm. I just had book club on Monday. I mean, that is a very common theme. I think the book collections are really good. They're new. Mm-hmm. They're up to date. The whole process is very educational. And it'll be interesting to see what you say, because I don't know what you do about not having meeting spaces.
I think part of this effort is to identify what the optimum is. There's a subsequent piece that lays out exactly how you're going to get from here to there. We're trying to identify the best destination. And it may be as you get into the implementation, Kiowa, we may need to look not at what open-ended what should this library be, but we may wind up looking eventually at this is what we got. How do we optimize it? Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I mean, that's just, that's part of the muck of implementation.
Fortunately for me, 2 weeks ago, I went to the new library in Greeley.
Okay.
Which is very beautiful and is more than a library. It's kind of like got some, I don't know if you've been there.
I have not.
They worked in conjunction with the city. It's a $30 million facility. So they were going to make something for like kids. It's like got a science thing in there.
Yeah.
Component.
Yeah.
But they more than doubled their foot traffic when they opened. Mm-hmm. Just because it's a new, huge, open, beautiful space.
Yeah.
And I know Susan's been there, so yeah. But it's really neat. And but I mean, it just shows the potential for bringing in more customers.
Yeah. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
I think Susan and I are going to have to put heads together and get more specific about the calendar as it proceeds from here. But we are going to be starting to look at prospective system-wide resource and service inventory goals. I mean, as the population grows to 2030, what should we be looking for in terms of collections and technology stations and so forth? Because all of that feeds into ultimately developing space needs models for the different locations within the service area. And then part of the process is then to take that optimum space need, at this location, at Kiowa and so on, and, trying to assess how we can get to whatever those recommendations are. I mean, here we, in this building, we have really a variety of options because of the choices you all made, years ago. I mean, we have a load of space that we can put to use in this building.
Exactly. And a good location.
Just tremendous. Good location.
So.